Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, Ashley Thompson and I take you to a wild, remote, and sometimes very cold national park in the north central part of the United States. We also hear another classic American story, Jack London's To Build a Fire. But first, Brian Lynn has some political news from the United States.
President Barack Obama says the United States will take action against Russia for carrying out cyber attacks during the U.S. election. Obama said anytime it is proven that a foreign government tried to influence the integrity of U.S. elections, officials need to take action, and we will. He made the comments during an interview with National Public Radio released Friday. Obama also spoke to reporters about the issue during a press conference Friday at the White House. He said U.S. intelligence agencies have investigated the issue and found that Russia was responsible for leaking emails of U.S. people and political institutions. Thousands of emails were leaked from the Democratic National Committee last July. The emails contained private information about committee activities. Private emails from a top campaign advisor to Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton were also leaked. Some of the details were considered embarrassing for Clinton and the Democratic Party. Obama said he even brought up the issue when he saw Russian President Vladimir Putin at a G20 meeting in China in September. He said he told Putin to cut it out. Obama said he wanted to speak directly to Putin to let him know there would be serious consequences if the leaks did not stop. We did not see further tampering of the election process, he said, but Obama noted that at that time, the leaks were already public and could no longer be stopped. Obama said he thinks his administration handled the leaks correctly by making them public. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence released a statement on the leaks in October. The statement accused the Russian government of directing the leaks involving U.S. people and political organizations. It said the stolen information was intended to interfere with the U.S. election process. The statement added that top Russian officials must have authorized the activities.
And then we allowed you and the American public to make an assessment as to how to weigh that going into the election.
Obama said the United States had not yet decided how to answer the Russian actions.
Our goal continues to be to send a clear message to Russia or others not to do this to us, because we can do stuff to you. But it is also important for us to do that in a thoughtful, methodical way.
He added that the U.S. response might be handled in a private way. Obama noted that U.S. relations with Russia had already declined in recent years over several issues. He said the U.S. currently has many sanctions in place against Moscow.
So how we approach an appropriate response that increases costs for them for behavior like this in the future, but does not create problems for us, is something that's worth taking the time to think through and figure out.
Russian officials have repeatedly denied any involvement in activities intended to influence the U.S. elections. They have also urged U.S. officials to make public any evidence they have. Both Republicans and Democrats in the U.S. Congress have called for investigations into possible Russian influence in the election. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and House Speaker Paul Ryan of Wisconsin have called for full investigations into the election. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has rejected suggestions by intelligence agencies that Russia carried out cyber attacks to help him win the election. On Thursday, Trump again raised questions about the accusations on Twitter. If Russia or some other entity was hacking, why did the White House wait so long to act? Why did they only complain after Hillary lost? He wrote. I'm Brian Lynn.
The state of Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. Our national park this week protects four major ones. The National Park Service says water is the foundation of this wild and remote place. Welcome to Voyageurs National Park. You must have a strong desire to see Voyageurs to make the visit. It is not an easy place to get to. Much of the park is accessible only by boat. The Voyageurs for whom the park was named understood this well. Voyageur is a French word meaning traveler.
In the 1700s, French-Canadian fur traders started coming to the area seeking beaver fur and other animal coats. The product was in great demand in Europe. The fur traders traveled to and from the area for business. They took canoes to get around. The boat trips were often long and hard. The waters and wild animals created great dangers. Voyageur life became legendary. The men were seen as brave adventurers, but they were also romantics. They became known for singing songs as they navigated the waterways. Of course, the Voyageurs were not the first people in the area that is now Voyageurs National Park. People first arrived there about 10,000 years ago. They were mostly nomadic and did not settle permanently.
In the last 1,000 years, Native American tribes settled in the area, including the Cree, Monsoni, and Assiniboine. The Ojibwa were the residents of more modern times. They served as guides to the fur traders. They also provided canoes and other important items. Voyageurs National Park covers almost 88,500 hectares. About half of that surface is water. Creating the park was a long and difficult process. Minnesotan state lawmakers first proposed the idea in 1891. But it was 80 years before Congress established the park. President Richard Nixon signed the bill that finally established Voyageurs as a national park in 1971.
The park protects four major Minnesotan lakes: Rainy Lake, Cabotogama, Namekin, and Sand Point. Rainy is the biggest. It covers about 930 square kilometers. It is a popular fishing lake. Fishers may catch walleye, northern pike, and smallmouth bass. In the winter, thick ice covers Rainy Lake. Visitors can walk and drive on it. Rainy Lake meets with Namekin and Cabotogama Lakes at Kettle Falls. A dam was built on the falls in the early 20th century. Along with it came the Kettle Falls Hotel. It housed traders, loggers, and visitors searching for gold in the area. The hotel fell into disuse in more modern times, but in 1987, the National Park Service made repairs and improvements to the building. It is the only indoor place to stay in the area.
Nature and art meet at the Ellsworth Rock Gardens in Voyageurs National Park. Park officials describe the gardens as the showplace of Lake Cabotogama. A carpenter and artist from Chicago named Jack Ellsworth built a summer home on the lake in the 1940s. He then designed, built, and cared for the rock gardens over 20 years. The artist also created garden sculptures from native stone. There were once about 200 rock sculptures. Ellsworth stopped caring for the gardens in his older age. When the National Park Service took control of the land, the gardens needed repair and restoration. Today, it is an interesting place to visit within the park.
Voyageurs National Park may be best seen at night. Officials there like to say that half of the park comes out after dark. Certainly, much of its magic does. The most spectacular light display on Earth is sometimes visible at Voyageurs. The Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, appear periodically in the night sky as streaks or clouds of light. The lights are most often white or soft green. However, they sometimes deepen into colors like yellow, red, blue, and even purple. The northern lights are not always immediately recognizable, but keep watching. If the light you see comes and goes, or intensifies over time, you may be witnessing the Aurora Borealis.
Along with the northern lights, Voyageurs is a great place to see meteors. These bursts of light cross the area's black skies mostly in August during the Perseids meteor shower. Meteors, often called shooting stars, form when pieces of ice and dust cross into Earth's atmosphere and begin to burn brightly. The display of natural fireworks is a great way to finish the day at Voyageurs National Park. You can fall asleep under the stars and be sure that more extraordinary nature awaits you when day breaks in Voyageurs National Park. It's time for another classic American story. Today we hear To Build a Fire by Jack London.
The man walked down the trail on a cold gray day. Pure white snow and ice covered the earth for as far as he could see. This was his first winter in Alaska. He was wearing heavy clothes and fur boots, but he still felt cold and uncomfortable. The man was on his way to a camp near Henderson Creek. His friends were already there. He expected to reach Henderson Creek by 6 o'clock that evening. It would be dark by then. His friends would have a fire and hot food ready for him. A dog walked behind the man. It was a big gray animal, half dog and half wolf. The dog did not like the extreme cold. It knew the weather was too cold to travel. The man continued to walk down the trail. He came to a frozen stream called Indian Creek. He began to walk on the snow-covered ice. It was a trail that would lead him straight to Henderson Creek and his friends. As he walked, he looked carefully at the ice in front of him. Once he stopped suddenly, and then walked around a part of the frozen stream. He saw that an underground spring flowed under the ice at that spot. It made the ice thin. If he stepped there, he might break through the ice into a pool of water. To get his boots wet in such cold weather might kill him. His feet would turn to ice quickly. He could freeze to death. At about 12 o'clock, the man decided to stop to eat his lunch. He took off the glove on his right hand. He opened his jacket and shirt and pulled out his bread and meat. This took less than 20 seconds, yet his fingers began to freeze. He hit his hand against his leg several times until he felt a sharp pain. Then he quickly put his glove on his hand. He made a fire, beginning with small pieces of wood and adding larger ones. He sat on a snow-covered log and ate his lunch. He enjoyed the warm fire for a few minutes. Then he stood up and started walking on the frozen stream again. A half hour later, it happened. At a place where the snow seemed very solid, the ice broke. The man's feet sank into the water. It was not deep, but his legs got wet to the knees. The man was angry. The accident would delay his arrival at the camp. He would have to build a fire now to dry his clothes and boots. He walked over to some small trees. They were covered with snow. In their branches were pieces of dry grass and wood left by floodwaters earlier in the year. He put several large pieces of wood on the snow under one of the trees. On top of the wood, he put some grass and dry branches. He pulled off his gloves, took out his matches, and lighted the fire. He fed the young flame with more wood. As the fire grew stronger, he gave it larger pieces of wood. He worked slowly and carefully. At 60 degrees below zero, a man with wet feet must not fail in his first attempt to build a fire. While he was walking, his blood had kept all parts of his body warm. Now that he had stopped, cold was forcing his blood to withdraw deeper into his body. His wet feet had frozen. He could not feel his fingers. His nose was frozen too. The skin all over his body felt cold. Now, however, his fire was beginning to burn more strongly. He was safe. He sat under the tree and thought of the old men in Fairbanks. The old men had told him that no man should travel alone in the Yukon when the temperature is 60 degrees below zero. Yet here he was. He had had an accident. He was alone. And he had saved himself. He had built a fire. Those old men were weak, he thought. A real man could travel alone. If a man stayed calm, he would be all right. The man's boots were covered with ice. The strings on his boots were as hard as steel. He would have to cut them with his knife. He leaned back against the tree to take out his knife. Suddenly, without warning, a heavy mass of snow dropped down. His movement had shaken the young tree only a tiny bit, but it was enough to cause the branches of the tree to drop their heavy load. The man was shocked. He sat and looked at the place where the fire had been. The old man had been right, he thought. If he had another man with him, he would not be in any danger now. The other man could build the fire. Well, it was up to him to build the fire again. This time, he must not fail. The man collected more wood. He reached into his pocket for the matches. But his fingers were frozen. He could not hold them. He began to hit his hands with all his force against his legs. After a while, feeling came back to his fingers. The man reached again into his pocket for the matches. But the tremendous cold quickly drove the life out of his fingers. All the matches fell onto the snow. He tried to pick one up, but failed. The man pulled on his glove and again beat his hand against his leg. Then he took the gloves off both hands and picked up all the matches. He gathered them together. Holding them with both hands, he scratched the matches along his leg. They immediately caught fire. He held the blazing matches to a piece of wood. After a while, he became aware that he could smell his hands burning. Then he began to feel the pain. He opened his hands, and the blazing matches fell onto the snow. The flame went out in a puff of gray smoke. The man looked up. The dog was still watching him. The man got an idea. He would kill the dog and bury his hands inside its warm body. When the feeling came back to his fingers, he could build another fire. He called to the dog. The dog heard danger in the man's voice. It backed away. The man called again. This time the dog came closer. The man reached for his knife, but he had forgotten that he could not bend his fingers. He could not kill the dog because he could not hold his knife. The fear of death came over the man. He jumped up and began to run. The running began to make him feel better. Maybe running would make his feet warm. If he ran far enough, he would reach his friends at Henderson Creek. They would take care of him. It felt strange to run and not feel his feet when they hit the ground. He fell several times. He decided to rest a while. As he lay in the snow, he noticed that he was not shaking. He could not feel his nose or fingers or feet. Yet he was feeling quite warm and comfortable. He realized he was going to die. Well, he decided, he might as well take it like a man. There were worse ways to die. The man closed his eyes and floated into the most comfortable sleep he had ever known. The dog sat facing him, waiting. Finally, the dog moved closer to the man and caught the smell of death. The animal threw back its head. It let out a long, soft cry to the cold stars in the black sky. And then it turned and ran toward Henderson Creek, where it knew there was food and a fire.
That was To Build a Fire by Jack London. I'm Katie Weaver. That's all the time we have for today's Learning English on the Voice of America. Thanks for listening.